Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Keep making the work. Like, you can't be like showing or doing anything. Like, unless you're making the work, you can't, nothing else can come from it. And it's just like, oh yeah, like I need to just get back into making and like getting my hands dirty, and like that stuff will come from that. Like, I have felt a little daunted in like re-entering my studio practice after making like a big, really physical training work. I was like, yeah, I just need to start drawing and getting my, like, making those connections, because ultimately, yeah, that's what it's about, is like the work.
It is my pleasure to welcome artist mother Hannah Shalhoub to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Hannah is an artist, educator, and environmental activist raised and currently working in New Orleans. She received her BA from Brandeis University in 2009 and her MFA from Cranbrook Academy of Art in 2016. Hannah has exhibited widely around the American South, and her work has been featured in the New York Times, Hand Papermaking, American Craft, Garden and Gun, Bomb, Hyperallergic, Burnaway, The LA Times, The Boston Globe, and more. Her work is held in the collections of the City of New Orleans and the Ogden Museum of Southern Art. And in 2022, Hannah was the South Arts Southern Prize winner, as well as the South Arts Louisiana State Fellow. Impressive list of accolades. Hannah, thanks so much for being here with me today and sharing in conversation. And welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited for this conversation.
Yes, me too. I, you know, have been following your work for at least half a year, because I know I emailed you and was like, hey, let's do this. And then, you know, it's hard to connect sometimes, but I'm just really looking forward to learning more about your work, and am very inspired by what you're making. I always love to start by having artists share a bit about how they ended up as an artist, if it was something in their childhood that they feel like they were exposed to that maybe led them along this path, or, you know, was art something that you were introduced to later on? Did you kind of see models of artists growing up? You want to share about that?
Yeah. I thought this was a really cool question. I mean, I was always into art and drawing and painting when I was a kid. And like, my parents kind of fostered that, or like, you know, for birthdays, I was always given like art supplies, and like for camps, I always went to art camps. And then in New Orleans, I had like the incredible opportunity. There's a really awesome public arts, kind of a magnet school. So like half a day I went to my academic school, and then half a day I went to this just dedicated art school. And I think that's the first time like I was really taken seriously as an artist, and all my teachers were working artists, and like you had to produce, there was like an assignment every week, and every Monday was critique, and you just like had to show up, and like it was cool. Like, they took us really seriously, and they like forced us to take each other really seriously. And it was an incredible like foundation of art, going like half a day every day of high school. And then, you know, I decided to go to a liberal arts college for university, and there kind of just was like looking around, you know, as I was like trying to figure out my major, and I was like, oh, like I was interested in anthropology and sociology, but I was like, I'm not going to be an anthropologist, but like, I actually think like I want to keep making art. So I decided like I'm going to major in studio art. That seems like as wise as a decision as majoring in anthropology in terms of like future career aspects or prospects. And then like, it's so happy, you know, I was from New Orleans and Katrina happened right before my freshman year of college. So I was basically away at college during the sort of immediate aftermath of Katrina. And then my senior year was actually when Prospect One was in New Orleans, which is this international, now it's a triennial that happens in New Orleans. And I came home from winter break as a senior and was like, oh, like art is happening here. And all of these sort of artist run spaces got started to kind of meet that moment of Prospect, to like meet all the attention and like that art could be a part of rebuilding the city. So I guess, yeah, that sort of was like, okay, I'm going to move home and just like try and be an artist in this community and also like use art to help rebuild the city. And then just kind of went from there.
I love that. I definitely think of New Orleans as a place that is rich in arts tradition and, you know, culturally a place where artists can be artists, you know, and not be quite as, I don't know, connected to outcomes, but where there's more space for experimentation and growth and, you know, and I'm speaking from the experience of somebody who is friends with folks who live in New Orleans and having, you know, visited several times. But I love that you came back, you know, as a student, you were kind of like, I don't know about this art thing, but I'll try it. And then you came back to your city and you saw it, like you saw tangible representations of it that helped solidify your choice, I guess, as a student, which is really cool.
Definitely.
Yeah. I feel like, I know for me, that would be the opposite of, I have to go find the legacy, the examples of being an artist somewhere else, because I'm not going to find it where I'm from, you know, like the journey was a bit different. So I really like that. I would love for you to share a bit more specifically about the art that you make and your practice. Maybe for listeners who have not seen it before, could you describe what it looks like and, you know, some of the materials that you use and a bit about your process?
Sure. I live in New Orleans and my art explores what does it mean to live in our current age, the age of global warming, and specifically what's at stake where I live in Southern Louisiana, and kind of like exploring the history that got us to where we are and like our present, and then imagining, you know, hopefully a livable future. Mm-hmm. And I use, you know, for the past few years, I've tried to be as fossil free as possible, kind of in line with like the ethos of my work. You know, I'm thinking a lot about the impact of the fossil fuel industry on, you know, my city, but also sort of the world. So a part of my practice is, you know, sourcing materials as, you know, sustainably as possible. And also the byproduct of that is that it needs to be kind of as specific to my landscape as possible. So I'm using a lot of found materials. I guess in my recent work, a lot of like pipes. And I'm also making my own paper made of sugarcane, combining sugarcane and shredded plastic. You know, the historical legacies, thinking a lot about enslavement and then sort of the petrochemical industry. So kind of sugarcane and plastic. And my work kind of manifests as drawings and sculptures and installations and
plants.
I think of all its drawings, but like some are drawings that you can, you know, spatially explore and walk through. And I incorporate living plants. So like the work increasingly is like becoming these ecosystems, but then I'm also kind of making plants out of the paper, my own paper, and confusing for the viewer, like what's alive and what's dead and what's real and what's fake. And like the plants are increasingly kind of becoming with this like infrastructure and imagining the afterlife of our cultural detritus. I'm also using a lot of plastic waste, and the waste is kind of becomes part of autobiographical and makes me think a lot like as a mother, just all of this waste associated with young children that ends up in the work, and sort of bright colors and living plants, and maybe from further away, kind of beautiful, or I hope you're sort of drawn in to explore. But then as you get closer to the work, you kind of discover the trash and the waste, and, you know, probably recognize things you yourself has used. We're all sort of implicated in using these plastic things and thinking about your role in it. And then also like how we can collectively make change to avoid this future, so that this isn't what we're like passing down to our kids, what our like descendants are going to inherit.
Yeah, I love that so much. And I feel like you perfectly described what your work is and what it looks like. But at the same time, there's, until you see an image of it, it's like, so there's, you know, because there's just such a wide variety of material. I just love that you put living plants like back in too, as that like full cycle, like kind of like speaking to the birth, the, you know, creation, the journey, the destruction, and like pulling it back through, is just like a really interesting way to think about something in this like collection of materials. Like I'm looking at Tremblante. Mm. Is that how you say that piece? Where it actually using the pipes created a watering mechanism for you to be able to add living plants in, which is really interesting and cool. And also it's a structure that stands on its own as well as doing those things, almost creature-like.
Yeah, definitely a creature likeness, and like it is standing but kind of somewhat precariously, or like thinking about you know, in particular like the precarity of my landscape, and also just like what we're, I don't know, kind of teetering on this precipice of what the future holds, and the pipe as the conduit, like thinking about, yeah, like the afterlife of this industry, and like could the pipes then have this be like the conduit for bringing life and sustaining plants, and actually like have this large scale installation up right now where I'm actually like making moving water, where I'm turning these wellheads into fountains, which kind of came from that. It, like that particular sculpture, which is something, you know, it's something I'd wanted to do for a while. Like a lot of things I had to kind of activate the piece by watering them, but this, it's like ongoing.
Mm. Tell me a bit about your journey as an artist, developing the skills to work with so many materials. I don't know if you were a sculpture major at Cranbrook or what your, or it at Brandeis, like what your background is materially, but I look at this work and I'm like, how did she figure out how to add a plant and a pipe and a plastic thing and a, you know, because there is this elegance to the final work that is just like, you read the materials list and you're like, really? Like this thing, I mean, and you know, and then you can see the materials, but there's just like this finesse that you seem to do. I'm just curious about a bit more of the process materially, combining all of these things, and how you kind of learned these skills.
Yeah, thank you. I like hearing my work called elegant. It's like the opposite of what my studio looks like. I studied painting at Brandeis and at Cranbrook.
Oh, cool.
Kind of funny to be, I mean, I wasn't really making paintings when I started Cranbrook, but like the model of Cranbrook is like, you know, it's so interdisciplinary. Like, I was in the painting building, and most people were making more traditional paintings on canvas. But, you know, I think of my whole practice under the umbrella of drawing, and the like mentor at Cranbrook was, you know, supported me being in painting and kind of exploring the other departments. And yeah, just like kind of taught myself a lot of the stuff. Welding, I did take a course at like a community college, and like paper making, I learned from this paper maker in Detroit named Meg Harris, like took a course. And then, you know, kind of just like intuitively, I feel like taught myself a lot of the stuff, and also making my own ink basically from a book. But they're all, I mean, I really like process and sort of with the challenge of working with materials that are sort of from this place or more sustainable, like figuring out like how to do that and how to like integrate them together. But it definitely like is a longer process, you know, of like figuring out the materials and how to like experimenting with like processing the paper and putting it together and like how to make it sculptural and stand up, but like being able to learn, like kind of like make a move on the welder and then like bring the paper mache. I don't know, being able to like control all the things and work intuitively has been a really fun challenge.
Yeah. And that is, you know, what is amazing about your work is the balance between all of the materials and how they're like functioning to create one structure together. I would love to hear more about your process for sourcing materials, because I think there's lots of artists who they like the idea of using recycled materials, or and myself included, like, you know, of course I have used and often use like my family's personal recycled materials, like cardboard boxes or you know, cereal boxes to draw and paint on, or like things like that. But you know, pipes and wire and plants, and you're talking about a different level of sourced material that I'm just curious, like, what is your process for collection?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, with the pipes, it started just like my friend was like renovating his house, and he was like, I have these pipes, do you want them? And I was like, oh yeah. And like then starting to realize that I could get more like the scrapyard as a as a place to go, which is also a little bit dangerous, both physically and like a, you know, the kinds of people, you know, out of desperation that are ending up at the scrapyard. It's a little bit sketchy. But so I usually go with somebody to both help me like haul the materials and just as like a safety precaution. But the scrapyard is also like incredibly inspiring to me, or like it's sort of kind of like the afterlife of our culture, like where all this big metal stuff is then just like a staircase that's just like twisted up and just kind of like a glimpse into the future. So it's always also really like interesting for me to spend time just like looking at the scrapyard. And then a whole other layer that I've been tuned into through this most recent project is like also like the toxicity of these materials and having to be like really careful. Obviously, when I'm welding, wearing all these PPE, but just like for this recent installation that I have up now, it was, I wanted to use old oil and gas valves, and then like realizing, being told by somebody, being like, you know, those can be radioactive. And like at the moment I found that out, I was like pumping breast milk in my studio and I was like, what? You know, like obviously I care about my own health, but like as a mom, as a lactating person, like I was like, what? And like learn, like I would thought those pieces were not radioactive, but then, you know, just also trying to be really safe when I'm using reclaimed materials. And then other things, like I'm also making ink from oak galls. So that's like a much softer, just like, you know, kind of spending time with an old oak tree and looking for the galls, which is something I really like. And
okay, but you're also making ink from fossil fuel pollution. What what is that process like? I don't even, I'm like, what are you doing? Siphoning it off the parking lot? Like,
basically, you know, in thinking about like what what are renewable resources where I live, and like bagasse, which is this byproduct of sugarcane refining. It's like when they squeeze out the sugarcane, the leftovers is bagasse. And there's actually mountains of it. And I'm like, oh, I can use that as paper material. And like plastic waste, also unfortunately a renewable resource. And then as I learned to make my own inks, I was like, you know, unfortunately, like pollution is this renewable resource here. And like, how can I, you know, make that visible and with the ink? And through all of this work, have met like activist groups that are working to fight pollution. There's this region, like between New Orleans and Baton Rouge along the Mississippi River, is this industrial corridor that is known as Cancer Alley for the high rates of illnesses that people there suffer. And I've been kind of working with groups there and approached my friend, Ms. Gail LaBeouf, who is a leader of this group, Inclusive Louisiana, and was like, telling her, she calls me like pipeline girl, like she's seen my work, she's like, yeah, pipeline girl. But I was like, you know, and she just, you know, is like really supportive of an artist also talking about these issues and recognizing the power of art. And she was excited about the idea of like making an ink from this stuff, and then was kind of like, she knows the area, and kind of like we talked about it a lot. And then she went out with me one day and basically showed me a spot where there's like a coal export facility that's right next to the river. So they're like, you know, I guess putting coal on boats to go somewhere else, but there's like mountains of coal, and like right outside their fence in the ditch next to the road, it's like the mud is just black, like from the runoff of the coal. And I collected that mud and basically like dried it out and ground it and made it into coal, like made it into, I'm calling it fossil fuel
paint or ink.
Which essentially, you know, like carbon black, or like what, like soot, like that is kind of what black ink was made from. But, and also with that stuff, I mean, whenever I'm grinding, trying to be really safe, wearing masks and PPE and stuff. But yeah, trying to think about like my ecology in like, well, living in a city and like in this region, and like, what are the like, quote unquote, like for better or for worse, like resources at hand. And increasingly trying to be safe and like mindful of like making work about pollution and not like polluting myself.
Yeah. I mean, that leads into my next question, which, thinking about your trajectory as an artist, like somebody who grew up in New Orleans, but then, you know, kind of moved away from school and was living in Detroit, went to Cranbrook. Curious about your relationship to like the concepts that your work is focusing on. In New Orleans, it is very visible, right? You see it maybe more directly than in other places in the country, which is not to say that, you know, not to say that other places in the country are not just as damaging to the environment, but of course we know that the effects of climate change are most drastically, you know, felt in underprivileged communities and communities of color. And I guess I'm just thinking about you as an artist moving back to New Orleans and like seeing this and wanting to make work about it and having that tangible relationship to these issues. But then what about before that? Were you, you know, were you making work about something differently, or has this always been like concepts that are close to your heart that were maybe a little more like about your own personal consumption and use? Just curious about that trajectory conceptually a little bit in the work.
Yeah. When I was in at Brandeis in undergrad and mm-hmm. I was studying as a painter, I was really into plain air painting. I still love like drawing from observation. A lot of my work is, you know, representational of stuff. It's not abstract. I moved home after Katrina, and then was kind of my body of work was exploring the city basically like through drawing, like biking around and kind of like drawing places, specifically places like that had been abandoned, people couldn't return to, and then were being like recolonized by the landscape and this kind of push and pull between the built environment and the natural environment. Mm-hmm. And then when I moved to Detroit and went to Cranbrook, I was also, I mean, there's somewhat of a similar landscape, like different reasons why Detroit looks the way it does, but it kind of, there's some visual similarities, and was also exploring the new city, thinking about that. And was starting to think more like about the environment in grad school and just like exploring materials, but really like deciding to move home to New Orleans. And this was like, you know, we had me and my, at that, when we moved from New Orleans to Detroit, like my partner, we were just dating, and then we got married while we were in Detroit. And like the plan was always to return to New Orleans, but then he was like, oh, it's actually like pretty nice up here. Like, why are we moving home? And I'm like, he's from Detroit. And I'm like, I'm from New Orleans. So we're going back. And he was just like, what, you know, like why we wanted to start a family? Like, why would we move to a city below sea level in a time of rising seas? And I was just like, we're doing it. Like, like, you know, it's not a logical, rational decision. It was like, you know, this is the place I love. But in sort of making the decision to move home, I really wanted to explore for myself and through my work, kind of like, how did we get here? Because like growing up in New Orleans, like the things I didn't really learn about, and definitely my understanding of like the impact of the fossil fuel industry on our landscape, I was not like taught about that or really understood that. So wanted to like come home, really make that be a part of my work and like use my platform as an artist. And it's been, you know, I guess I just also came home at a time when a lot of people, I mean, it like are thinking about this specifically in New Orleans. And was really easy to get like involved in all these different ways that have been so like inspiring to my work.
Thank you. I wanna sit with some of those ideas for longer. And there's just so much in your work that I feel like is worth investigating, you know, just because the work is wonderful, but also because there's concepts that are really important for us to pause and think about. Join me, Kaylin Butine, in a year-long mentorship program and exhibition opportunity. Let me tell you about the Kinhouse cohort. The Kinhouse Cohort Program is a small group experience for 10 to 12 artists to work together and with me during the 2025 calendar year. We will meet monthly and communicate weekly to support one another in our goals. In January 2026, we will have a group exhibition together at the Kinhouse Gallery in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and there will be other career-growing opportunities we share together. Each artist will be paired with accountability buddies for further friendship and growth, and I will be catering my mentorship to your specific needs as an artist, wherever you are along your artist path. If you don't know me that well, I'm the host of the Artist Mother podcast, an artist and curator, and I run the artist residency and gallery titled Kinhouse in Fort Wayne, Indiana. You can see more at kinhouseart.com. My mentorship style will focus on the values I hold, including value-led studio practices, sustainable systems for art admin, reading, writing, and research, pursuing meaningful art-making goals, growing creative resilience, maintaining boundaries with social media, cultivating self-kindness and generosity, creating a generative art network, and seeking opportunities that have impact. This opportunity is open to all genders, and you do not have to be an artist caregiver or parent to apply to the Kinhouse cohort. Applications close really soon. They're closing Sunday, January 19th. Please get your application in anytime that day before I take down the form and start looking through the applications on January 20th. Please apply and consider working with me and creating community with a small group of artists and exhibiting together in 2025. I'd love to see more from you and possibly connect if this opportunity feels good. You can find out more at kinhouseart.com/cohort, and the link to apply is in the show notes. I want to shift gears a little bit and ask you about being an artist parent. My guess is that you would say that you identified as an artist before you were a parent. And so there was a transition that had to happen between, you know, I am an artist and I have an art career and I'm pursuing XYZ, and now I'm going to add that parent hat in. Is that the trajectory? Talk to me about that transition a little bit and some of the things that you were feeling in those moments of decision making.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I, you know, always wanted to have kids. And when I met my husband, that was something we're just like, yeah, like we want to build a family together. And something I kind of was always on the horizon, but definitely saw myself as, you know, an artist first. And I think he was ready before I was ready to have kids and kind of had to wait for me. And like, I think as an artist, since like the path is so unclear and you kind of just have to make your own path, like you just like was wanting my, you know, career, quote unquote, to be further, to be like more established before we had kids, or just kind of was also had some female mentors that like instilled in me, you had to choose between a mother and an artist, and that like you couldn't really be a successful artist and be a mother, which definitely gave me pause. And then at a certain point I was just like, this is my life, like, yeah. What's gonna happen? Like, having kids is also an important like valid part of what I want, and like we'll just figure it out and hopefully not lose momentum. Or I guess, yeah, I was nervous about like losing momentum, which like, I don't know, I think life is, you just like, you make plans and God laughs, like, you know, whatever's gonna happen is gonna happen.
Well, I think as artists, we, whether you have kids or not, we all go through cycles of losing momentum and gaining momentum, right? Like that is the unsteady path of the artist.
Totally. Yeah. And actually like I found out I was pregnant with my first kid, like right when lockdown happened. So like kind of, you know, everyone sort of lost momentum at that point. Mm-hmm. It was actually a really good time to be like gestating a kid, and making work and moving slower. And, you know, more and more I'm realizing, and now I have two kids.
And, so it sounds like you have two kids under four.
Two kids under four.
Yeah. You're in the whatever. The thick of it is too common of a phrase, but you're in those challenging years for sure.
I know. I totally forget that. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's just the water I'm swimming in. But yeah, right. I'm like, this is really hard.
Yeah.
Or like, I understand from my friends that are parents with older kids, the challenges, you know, that just evolves, but this is a particularly, like dependent, very, kids are very dependent on me for a lot of physical,
yes,
physical needs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the time doesn't really decrease, but the like level of dependency definitely changes, or the ways in which they depend on you changes, which can feel, you know, positive and negative as you go through it. But I want to hear a bit more about just like the day-to-day, Hannah. Like what does it look like to be a full-time artist, to have two kids under four? How are you kind of shuffling things within your, like, you know, your partnership, within, you know, the moves that you want to make as an artist right now? What does some of that day-to-day shuffle look like?
Usually getting up and, you know, nursing my baby and then getting my daughter ready for school. And then our childcare. I have a 1-year-old. My husband also has a kind of flexible schedule. So between me and him, and my mother, we kind of all share childcare. So I'm just not like in the studio necessarily 9 to 5, but usually I end up kind of taking my daughter to school. And like right now I have a really good situation where like I can bike, drop her to school, get to my studio. It's all within like the geography is really working to our favor right now. It's just like awesome to be able to ride with her to school on the bike and just like have that time together and be like out in fresh air. And then in the studio, man, I'm a little bit out of it because I just finished this big show and I'm just trying to like regroup. But I mean, I try to not be doing computery things at least till like later in the day. Like before I had kids, I would like not do computery things at all at my studio and just like try and make that like a sacred making space. But it's like, this is my protected time. So like now, you know.
Yeah. You don't necessarily want to bring that work home now because you've got your kids.
No, and I don't want to bring it home. I mean, I end up doing a lot of stuff at night, but try to like, at least when my brain is like the most fresh, like try and be like making and drawing or sculpting and I don't know, kind of like making lists and getting my hands dirty and a lot of like processing materials and like I feel like the actual drawing is probably like a small part of the actual work, but like preparing the paper and I don't know, just different like the ink, stirring things, like different things are in different stages of production and like making sure everything's like ongoing because of like how long the different processes are, like so that I have like future paper. Like I just made a big batch of paper, but like now I need to start like fermenting the next batch. So like in 3 months, like sort of like have these ongoing cycles. And also like spend time like collecting materials or like researching, which is like a lot of like kind of exploring different ecosystems or meeting up with scientists or like people that are spending time thinking about the things I'm thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Your practice is so rich and diverse. I love that.
It's definitely fun and engaging for me. And then like also trying to get people into the studio and like sharing my work and like trying to remember the flow. Now I'm just now I'm doing a lot of computery stuff, administrative, like trying to catch up.
Mm-hmm. Like
having just opened a show and just trying to get people to see the show and then like thinking about what happens to the show when it comes down.
Do you find that it's hard as an artist to know what to prioritize? Like, is it easy to distract yourself with certain, like I know for me, I love sourcing materials. I like work with a lot of textiles, so I can very easily distract myself with like going to the thrift store and, you know, when what I really should be doing is like more research and writing about my work or whatever. So hearing you describe like the diversity of your practice, I similarly have a practice that I feel like has all these different component parts. And sometimes I find that it can be a challenge to, you know, to know what to prioritize, which is not to say that like I don't meet deadlines or something, but it, you know, there's always this like question of like, am I spending my time the way that I should be right now, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I think I can easily, that's been something I've like been trying to implement, like the pushing the administrative work till like later in the day, really trying to harness the time when I have the most energy to be like making and like, you know, I'm always trying to get to like the intuitive place, you know, like not overthinking it and, you know, just like my hand, just like making and losing track of time, which is like such a luxury, you know, like in this like container of like protected, limited time. But like, I guess trying to create the conditions that I can like get into that. And I can so easily distract myself with like the, spreadsheets or like trying to follow, like in which like as an artist, we also have to be keeping up with that stuff or like finding the place for the art to be seen. But to like the thinking and the making, it's very hard to like carve out like the time to be also thinking. I mean, that's like when you have limited time in the studio, it feels really hard to like just be something that's so intangible and there's no like no product that is created from that, even though it's like so important.
Yeah. And especially in light of having just completed work for a big show, you know, sometimes the deadlines, like they're so needed because they help us like get the thinking done and get the work done. But I find that, you know, I sometimes have this anxiety about like, okay, but what's next? Like once I finish that goal, am I going to have something else to work on? And it's so funny because it's like, all I want is like the breathing space. But then, you know, you complete that thing and you're like, oh, crap. I gotta have the next like deadline to work towards, you know. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about, especially as an artist like yourself, who is, you know, primarily like an exhibiting artist where, you know, maybe there's like different forms of economy that you're driven by rather than like selling your work or doing things. I would love to hear a little bit more about like what drives your decision making and, you know, how you choose, like, is that a good goal for me to focus on next?
Yeah. I mean, that's like I'm kind of in the thick of that right now.
Long-term questions that we're all trying to figure
Yeah,
out.
no. I mean, I like also may, you know, trying something I've been working on for a while is trying to kind of get my work out of the South. And like I've showed pretty broadly around New Orleans and around the South. And it's I really like happy to show here and like to for people that live here to see this work. But it's part of like a global conversation. I want it to travel and be elsewhere and also raise attention to issues here elsewhere. So, you know, trying to figure out that. And actually my son just turned one last weekend, and I was supposed to make a book of my work. I was supposed to print a book of my like recent work before he was born. So like it I just printed it like right basically in September a couple months ago, and then had this big show open. So now I finally have the books and I'm like have the space to kind of get them out and figure out like, you know, connecting to people that have been following my work or had studio visits of the years, you know, like the just I've met over my practice. And you know, trying to see if they might be coming to visit Prospect Six, this exhibition in New Orleans, or you know, like, can I send them this book and trying to like connect with people now. So yeah, trying to be sort of more strategy minded right now, which is definitely not a fun use of studio time, but feels kind of necessary in order to, you know, like I want this current exhibition to travel. So kind of building on connections and raising awareness of it. And then just like making people aware of what I've been up to. And like this book also, there's a essay in it that I commissioned from this writer and curator and really goes into all the process. So helping people kind of understand also like what goes into my work. You know, I think you can see the work and like, you know, I'm says handmade paper, but like there's like images of me actually like making the, you know, like what does like these processes, like what goes into all that. So kind of helping understand that.
Cool.
And yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, tell me more specifically about the prospect show. That's the big one that will hopefully still be up by the time we release this episode.
Yeah, that would be great. Prospect Six opened in November, and like I guess one of your first question was like how did I or deciding to become an artist, and like Prospect One was sort of happening in New Orleans when I was in college, a senior in college, and made me decide to move home, which that was in 2008. So
So how full circle to now have your work in Prospect
yeah, I'm like,
Six,
what year is it now?
2024, I
Yeah,
think.
I can't quickly do the math for that. But yeah, so it means a lot for me to be part of this exhibition that is in New Orleans, but it features a roster of international artists and people are visiting from all over the world. And the theme of this prospect is like the future is present. The harbinger is home. So, like, really, you know, thinking about this moment and climate change. And I was, that theme really resonated with me and also really wanted to like honor the city and make something that was like really specific to this place. And when I found out, when I was invited, I was also 9 months pregnant. So it was like, yes, like obviously I had to say yes. And like, you know, they're like offering me this opportunity and like, are you taking new things on right now? Like looking at my belly. And I'm like, you know, I sublet my studio for both babies. I sublet my studio and took a maternity leave and got another artist to take my space.
Oh,
I was
smart.
about to move out of my studio and I was like, yes, but like, you know, not what I thought my maternity leave was gonna be like. And what really had to like, you know, I did take 4 months off from my practice, which was like an incredible luxury, and be able to be at home. But then I was like coming back
all in.
I wanted to make a really ambitious installation. So that was, you know, really hard to be back in the studio and, you know, pumping milk and having like people, assistants working in my studio while I'm like pumping milk. I was just like, you know, all the things, and wanting to also be present in a little baby's life and my daughter's life.
Mm. I think we can always decide if like the timing is right for us. And sometimes it's going to be a challenge to like fit it all in. And sometimes, you know, it's always a challenge to fit it all in, I guess, is the point, right? So I'm happy for you that you still said yes to that opportunity that was so important to you as like a young artist, you know, and also that you were able to create that like sweet spot of like maternity leave and, you know, just really trying to do it all. I mean, it's hard, you know, it's hard to find that mental space, I feel like, especially, but the exhibition looks pretty incredible.
Thank you. I mean, luckily I was able to fit a residency in between when I was 6 months pregnant with my second.
Okay.
And I went to Hambidge. I was able to pull off like 10 days at Hambidge residency in Northern Georgia and, you know, had time there. This was before I knew I was going to be in Prospect, but had time to really like read and think. Like, I feel like the time that's impossible to do regularly. So I do feel lucky that I had already like had a really generative time and had just sort of all these like kind of like nugget, like just like a palette of ideas and things I really wanted to work with, which I think I'll probably be like working from what I produced in those 10 days, like thinking for a while. And it was also like, oh, it was so hard to make that residency happen, but like so necessary, and that like maybe it's only going to be every few years if I can pull it off. But like, wow, like that was, yeah, that was incredible.
I love that you brought that up. We run a short-term residency program here in Fort Wayne that's both family friendly, but also you don't have to bring your family. And I just think that there is so much to be said for even just a week away, you know, from your responsibilities and from, you know, just kind of that experience of juggling all the things. If you can carve out those few days, like even if you take three of them to just rest, you know, those other couple days are going to be really generative. Like you said, you're going to, the fuel that you will experience from resting, I think, is just like so important related to a residency, because it's like that mental nourishment that we all need when we're just going through the motions all the time, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I think it's about time you booked an art residency at Kin House Artist Residency. Like Hannah Chalou talked about in episode 162 of the Artist Mother podcast, it's so important to have time and space apart from your regular life to not only make your work, but to rest, to read, and to think about your work. Residencies can afford this experience for artist parents, whether you bring your kiddos or not. Coming out of your routine and settling into a space that has been set up for you to rest, to be inspired, to reflect, and to make your work in a focused way can be career changing. I run an artist residency in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and the Kin House Artist Residency is really committed to inclusivity. we are family friendly. There's no fee to apply. There's no hierarchy between emerging and established artists. And all of our residency fees are based on a household income sliding scale. Our residency is gender inclusive, and our 1 week residencies include the entire 2-story, 3-bedroom home, use of a detached art studio, use of a basement art studio, Wi-Fi, washer, dryer, kitchen, backyard with fire pit, back deck, front porch, and common areas. Residency does not include travel, food, or art supplies. You've got to bring those things or provide them on your own. We love our neighborhood where our art residency house is situated in our walkable Southwood Park in Fort Wayne. The house is within walking distance from some of our favorite neighborhood joints, and there's a park nearby with walking and running trails, gardens, and a large playground if you decide to bring your kids. We would love for you to consider booking a residency with us in 2025. Residencies are booked 1 week at a time, but you can also extend your residency to 2 weeks. You can either bring your family or, my recommendation, bring a few artist friends, share the cost, share the space, and have an incredibly inspiring week together. Join us at Kinhouse Artist Residency. You can find out more and book your spot today, kinhouseart.com/residency. A couple more questions, Hannah, before we wrap up. Just curious if there's anything that you feel like you do in particular that is inspiring or nourishing to you as an artist that is like a little ritual or a practice or, you know, like a little tip or something that you feel like has been really helpful to you.
I feel like I need to revisit this advice right now, but like in college, actually, like a professor of mine was, his advice was like, just always make the work, which feels like so simple, but it was like, just keep making the work. Like you can't be like showing or doing anything, like unless you're making the work, you can't, nothing else can come from it. And it's just like, oh yeah, like I need to just get back into making and like getting my hands dirty, and like that stuff will come from that. I feel like I have felt a little daunted in like re-entering my studio practice after making like a big, really physical training work. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I just need to start drawing and getting my like making those connections, because ultimately, yeah, that's what it's about, is like the work.
Yeah. I actually want to selfishly ask you about having a studio outside the home, because I am about to sign a lease on my first like big girl studio, if you will. Like I've always had had a studio, but it was always like home adjacent, either like a back, you know, like our garage or, and I just feel really ready for like that disconnect a bit of like, I have a place where I go work. It's not all under the same umbrella, you know? So I was just curious for you, like, how do you feel like having a studio, maybe like, what is your studio like? And, how do you feel like that out-of-home studio has influenced your navigation as an artist parent?
Well, congratulations. That's Thanks. So exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, having a studio, I mean, I love my studio. I've been in my current space for like a little bit more than five years. And it's a large warehouse. So we've like 14-foot ceilings, and it's kind of like old too, so dusty, but it's really raw, and like I built it out a little bit over the years, just like, you know, plywood walls. But for me, like I make paper, so like cement floors, I'm able to like get really dirty and do welding. And my space has, I have my own courtyard that's not, it's private.
Wow.
So like I do a lot of work with living plants. So I have this space that's sort of able to be its own like ongoing installation. I'm also able to like grow plants, which feels, you know, like really necessary to have that. And then also have like hoses for papermaking and all like that stuff.
Do you have parts of your practice that you bring home, or do you always kind of keep it separate?
It's like basically has to stay here though, like
materially you can't.
Yeah,
it's not like you're gonna bring that fossil fuel ink home to your
No, and like everything is like pretty big, and even the drawings, like all my inks are like this whole setup. But like actually was it in September there was a Hurricane Francine, which actually passed over New Orleans, but it was one of the hurricanes where it was just a shelter in place. Mm-hmm. And I knew this was like a less than a month before my exhibition opened Prospect. And I was like, basically packed things to take home. And like, I was like gluing together these paper leaves. So it was like somewhat of like a finite, like something that wasn't like totally, like I was not bring the welder or the big things, but, and I had to bring tarps. But like, you know, my kids didn't have childcare. I guess my husband wasn't having to work. So we were all at home, but actually like getting the kids distracted enough, like for me to have the protected space, it was kind of harder to like get away from the kids.
Yeah.
Like I was able to do it after like my 4-year-old was just like, where is she? Like, I hear her, like, what's she doing? Like, why isn't she with like, so I did take a little bit home, but usually I can't. And actually something like I made both my kids, I saved their placentas, and I was, you know, really loved learning about placentas and just like also what our bodies are capable of. And like both of them, my husband was involved in these, but we had them in the freezer and then thawed them and made like a placenta print on paper. And for my daughter, I drew back into it, like based on pictures. Like, I was really excited to like get pictures of the placenta and see all like the venation, like just like how awesome it is. And like my sons, we made the print. And we've since planted the planta, but I haven't had the time to paint back into it. I'm like, I'm going to have to bring it to my studio.
Yeah.
There's just like, there's no time anymore. So I'm like, yes. I'm going to bring it to the studio because I really want to do it. Like, he's already a year. I'm like, I need to make his.
Well, you got through Prospect. So now it's time for the placenta painting.
Yeah. Erica's like, hers is in their bathroom. And I'm like, we need to put labs up.
Yes. I love that. Well, you're giving me lots of inspiration for my soon to be out of home studio.
Yeah. It's going to be so incredible.
I can't wait. Hannah, I always like to close with 5 questions just as a way for everyone to get to know you a little bit better. Feel free to answer these as quickly as you would like. Who's your biggest art crush?
I think right now, Wangeshi Mutu. And she just had an incredible show. Well, it was at the New Museum, but it traveled to NoMA. And I was able to see it last year. It was during my maternity leave. So I got to go a lot with my new baby. Yeah. Love her
work. Okay. Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
India. Or like I've been twice. And I would really like to go. I mean, I would like to go like 100 more times and would love when my kids are older to take them.
What is a film or a book that's been a big inspiration to you?
Well, 2 books I've been thinking about a lot. One is Finding the Mother Tree by Suzanne Simard, which is like feels very topical to this podcast, but also just, you know, just like learning how trees are communicating and also like this idea of mothering, or like as a scientist, she was like, got a lot of flack for kind of anthropomorphizing trees, but how much easier it is for us to understand like what the trees are doing and kind of like how they're nurturing the other trees and like this network. And then this book called Psalm of the Wild Built by Becky Chambers, which is, I guess it's considered solar punk, but it's kind of, it's like a really easy read. And it's part of a series of three books, but it's a speculative future, but like if we get it right, or like ways that we could actually change our culture and create these beautiful communities, and like imagining the afterlife of our world, but not something like dark and terrible, which is like, I keep like kind of returning to those ideas and I'm always talking about it. I'm like, yeah, that's a great book.
Thanks for the recommendations. Favorite meal?
Anything with eggplant. I love eggplant.
Okay. And who would you like to give a shout out for supporting your work? Who do you want to thank?
Yeah, I guess I would say Mr. Willie Birch. He's a New Orleans artist and my mentor. And he's in his 80s, but he's somebody I've been knowing since I moved back home. And, you know, he's consistently pushing me and sometimes it's hard on me, but it's kind of important to have those people, like people that are supporting you, but also, you know, not just being like a yes person, not just being complimentary. And also I know that he really like loves me. So like this, this like loving support that's also, pushing me.
I'm so glad you have a mentor like that. Okay. And I always like to close by asking where folks can find your work and connect with you.
Yeah. Instagram, my handle is at studio.hnnh.chlw. So it's my name without the initials.
Without the vowels.
Without the vowels. and my website is hanashalu.com. But yeah, Instagram is probably the easiest. I'm trying to be somewhat active on it.
I'm trying to be not active on it. So, you know, opposite sides of the spectrum.
It's such a balance.
I know. I'm just kidding. But it's, yeah, I'm like, even that question, I'm like, should I not ask that question? Maybe artists don't want anybody to connect with them right now. We're overconnected. No, we are and we aren't.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like Instagram has led to a lot of like real life relationships for me, which is cool. And I feel like that is, you know, a cool, I don't know, somewhat non-hierarchical way to connect, which is cool.
Yes, it's a very neutral and accessible place, or can be.
Yeah.
All right, Hannah, this has been really delightful. Thank you so much for your time and for sharing. And if Heather Bird Harris is who connected us, shout out to Heather Bird, but I don't remember. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm glad to have come across your work. I love it. Everybody go find Hannah and go view her work. Thank you.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.